email ray@rte.ie. The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Hello, Pierce Brosnan.
Hello, Ray. How are you?
Great to talk to you. Thanks for taking time out. This will just get you going, knowing that you're talking to Ireland. We said you were coming on, and we asked people to send in questions. But some of them are comments.
Yes.
And this is my favourite so far. I drove by him one day, and I couldn't believe it. There you go.
very cryptic. I couldn't believe it.
I wonder what they couldn't believe. Well, it was Pierce Brosnan. They're still living off that story, Pierce. I drove by Pierce Brosnan one day. I couldn't believe it. Listen, great to have you on. Congratulations on the Oscar Wilde Award and congratulations on the nomination for the IFTA. I was just telling our listeners that I spent the morning watching The Last Rifleman and I was a blubbering mess. What a beautiful, lovely, emotional movie. And you're brilliant in it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you, Ray. Thank you. I had a lovely time doing it there with the director, Terry Lone. He and I have tried to work together many times over the years. And he brought me this jewel of a film, which was really based on a true story of this this gentleman, Bernard Jordan, who did. He left the old people's home. He was a World War II veteran, and he wanted to go celebrate his comrades in Normandy, left the home, and it was on the news and everything. They were looking for the old fella, and he went to honour his comrades who had fallen.
The
film is based on Bernard Jordan's life.
And you play Artie, who is based on Bernard. And Artie is 92 and three quarters, which is the three quarters is very important.
Yes.
He's a beautiful, vulnerable gentleman who's just lost his wife, Maggie. And he sets off from Northern Ireland down through Dublin, off to Rosslare. And it's a lovely journey for him and the people he meets along the way. And there's lovely interactions. And you had to... You obviously, you're not 92 and three quarters. You're a good bit younger. But you played him very convincingly.
Oh, that's very kind of you to say. Thank you. Well, I had great help from a wonderful company called Millennium FX. And they have done magnificent prosthetic work. So that work really, it was a 2.5 hour makeup every morning. But it was masterfully done by these wonderful artists each day. And, it was a kind of meditation in some respects, a slow transformation over the 2.5 hours. And thereafter, there's no acting required.
Well, that's...
because you look at yourself and you are this man.
Yeah. And playing a 92-year-old, did you think about, your own mortality? I don't know, because I'm not an actor, but when you play a role, does it force you into thinking like they might think?
There is a reflection. As I say, it was a meditation each morning, and then slowly as you kind of got up from the chair, you'd open your eyes, and there was this other you before you, and then you have the costume, you have the stick, you have the environment, you have also the preparation and the imagination that goes into making it. There was a wonderful documentary on the Normandy landings, and they interviewed these men, these soldiers, these heroes who had lost so much of their lives to the war. And so I listened to their stories constantly. It's a beautiful documentary, The Normandy Landings. And so you prepare, you sit with the script. The script was really well-founded. And then I was surrounded by wonderful actors like Jürgen Prochnow and John Amos and Clemens Posey. These actors are so grounded in their own reality and sincerity that you then just
go with it.
Trust that you've that you've done the work, really. But yes, of course, you reflect. Will I look like this when I'm 92 and three quarters, God willing? You know.
And Piers,
so it had an emotional journey.
People are seeing you differently. It's obviously you're playing an older version of Pierce Brosnan. You're also it's a different type of role. It's more reflective. It's more gentle.
It is, yes. I mean, I was trained as an actor there in London at the Drama Centre. It was a very heavy method orientated school, and I was taught to play everything, really, and that one must be allowed to go all over the stage to play leading roles, to play character parts. You know, I'm 70 years of age now, so I've been at this game for a long time, and I've had the good fortune to be still at the table, so I'm having the most wonderful time going off and playing roles like this. And you know, every now and then I'll go off and do a studio film, but I'm a working actor, always have been, and I've had the good fortune of playing James Bond and living in America and playing on American TV and been accepted into the culture of America. So, no, I'm very fortunate, very grateful, and there's, you know, there's work to be done. I have three films that I'm about to set sail on here. One is called Giant. It's about the life of Prince Nazim. I don't know if you remember him. He was a great boxer, a wonderful boxer. And I'm playing the role of Brendan Ingle. Brendan Ingle was his trainer, a renowned, famous, one of the greatest trainers. So
he had an interesting story, hadn't he, Brendan Ingle?
He had a fantastic story, Brendan. So, you know, that awaits me here to deal with the Dublin accent, to portray this man with the greatest sincerity. So, you know, I work later in the year. I'm going to do a film here that it's all been well with Helen Mirren, Ben Kingsley, and myself. It's the Thursday Murder Club.
Oh, yeah. Based on the Richard Osman novel, yes.
Richard Osman books.
Yeah.
Richard Osman wrote these wonderful books. So, about these, dare I say it, old folks in a retirement home, mature people in a retirement home. And the four of us are detectives, private sleuths. So, yes, so one tries to have to be an unexpected surprise.
You're busy. And then there's the art. I saw on your Instagram during the week that you presented Jane Goodall with one of your paintings for her 90th birthday, which is coming up, I think it's next week or the week after. So tell us about the art.
The art has always been with me. I left school there in South London when I was 16. Came away with a couple of CSEs, one in English, one in art, and a cardboard folder of drawings, a handmade cardboard folder. So the art has always been there. I started my life as a commercial artist, a trainee commercial artist, down in Putney there in Ravenna, and I was basically drawing straight lines every day, watering the spider plants and making cups of tea for these three other fellas that were in the studio. So the art started there, but, you know, thank God for the acting. And acting found me. I found the world of theater. But running parallel to that has been my art practice. And my wife, Keely, you know, curated the work there about 3 years ago, and there's about 250 paintings, and we had the first show. I had my first show, but really it was we, Keely and I, and that was in Hollywood, and then I went to Art Basel with some paintings, and then just here lately in Palm Desert. So it's very much alive. It's very much part of my life. You know, the acting will go on, but there will come a time when I just say, you know, I just want to stay in my studio and paint and do
ceramics. Isn't that brilliant? And it's been there for you during tough times. I suppose you've found refuge and solace in painting.
I did. I mean, my late wife was a great supporter of my work, Cathy, and it grew out of the illness and the time of our lives, which were very challenged by her ovarian cancer. So I set up a studio in our bedroom, and I would paint while she would recover from her chemo, and she cherished the work, and time went on, and that artistic life still lives with me. And now Keely, who's been, you know, my companion and wife for 30 years, she's a great muse. She has supported the work. So the work has grown out of a love, really, of love and my own passion for work and my own desire to create. It's a necessity in my life. I need it. I have to do it. So
it's sort of, and this is in no way undermining what you do, but it's doodling on steroids and with talent. No, but you seem to have pads all over the place beside the phone, etc. And you know, if you're in a long conversation, that's the genesis of some of your pictures, your paintings.
Yes. Well, right now as I'm speaking to you, Ray, I have these pads. Keely bought the island. It's a form of therapy. I'll send it to you, Ray.
Great.
But I also do plein air paintings, and the phone call pad drawings are just one aspect of my art practice, and the painting that I put up for auction there with Dr. Jane Goodall there a few days ago, that was a collaboration with Shepard Fairey. Shepard Fairey is an iconic artist, a brilliant artist, a street artist ostensibly, but he created the wonderful portrait of Obama when he was running for presidency, his presidency. So that, you know, is invigorating for me and inspiring, and to work alongside or collaborate with an artist like him is quite brilliant.
It's great to have something other than the acting. You mentioned James Bond, and of course, you know, whether you like it or not, you will always be remembered as James Bond, because it's a very small club, you see. It's a very small club. So I was doing the maths. You were in your early 40s when you, 41, 42, when you got the role?
That's it, yes. Yeah. You know, the Bond, my late wife Cassie, she was in a Bond movie, For Your Eyes Only, and we would joke about my being James Bond, and then lo and behold, we go to America. I do Remington Steele, looking for James Bond, and you know, they offered me the Living Daylights, but I couldn't get out of my contract with Remington Steele all those years ago, and I took the blow and marched on, and you know, I carried on with my career, and then 6 years later, it came back round. And that was GoldenEye.
Yeah.
So it was my destiny, I guess, to play this role. And it's, you know, it's a gift that keeps giving. I'm very proud of the work. And it was a very challenging moment in time because it had been dormant for 6 years. So, you know, does the world need another James Bond? Do we want to see James Bond again? And, of course, the world responded with, you know,
resounding
open
yes,
arms and a warm embrace.
Now, of course, you're very well aware that the rumours are swirling around again as to who is the next James Bond. Aaron Taylor Johnson is the name, and he is saying that, you know, he's not going to comment on the rumours. I'm wondering, the first time when your name was mentioned around Bond while you were still doing Remington Steele, was it all cloak and dagger, or was it out in the open, or was there less interest back in the day about who was going to be the next Bond?
Oh, no, there's always been interest. There's always been a deep fascination and curiosity and ownership from the audience of who shall be James Bond. And it's generational. It's been passed on. I mean, when I left Ireland in 1964, Navan, County Meath, on August 12th, just happened to be the same day that Ian Fleming, who wrote the books, he passed away on August 12th, 1964, and I was landing in London. And the first movie in Putney High Street that weekend, my mother and father took me to see. My stepfather, Bill Carmichael, was, you know, Goldfinger. And so...
It was written in the stars. Yeah, written in the stars.
Began a love of the movies completely, going to the pictures every weekend.
You mentioned your stepfather there as Bill Carmichael, and your character in Mamma Mia was Sam Carmichael. Was that done on purpose, or was it a coincidence?
No. God, Bill Carmichael was a grand man. He was a wonderful father to me. He was a lovely Glaswegian man, and. When he passed away, I was at the house with my mother sitting there one night. We were with the undertaker, and we were talking about the funeral. And I said, we've got to have the bagpipes for Dad. We've got to have the bagpipes. Anyway, we were sitting there talking. The phone rang. It was my agent in Los Angeles. And he said, you've been offered Mamma Mia. I said, what? I said, yes, with Meryl Streep. I said, good Lord, that's amazing. They said, but they want you to see the play. So I went to see the play a few nights later. My dad, Bill Carmichael, we sent him on his journey. The bagpiper played. And anyway, we're sitting in the theater on this particular night. I'm sitting with my family. And my daughter, Charlotte, said to me, Daddy, who are you playing? I said, I don't know. I forgot to ask. I'm one of the dads. So... You know, the gay dad came on. I said, well, I could play him, yeah. And then there's the adventurous father, you know. I said, I could play him. And then the handsome Sam Carmichael came on. So the name was already there.
Uh-huh.
And I said, I think that's the one.
Yeah.
I think that's the one that they've offered me. And then, of course, in the play, as in the film, you know, he says to Donna, Meryl Streep's character, he says, I still see you. Have my bagpipes. And in the movie, that scene is still there. I say, you still got my bagpipes. So I put the Carmichael clan on the bag.
Yes.
In the honor of Bill Carmichael. Yeah. So that's the story.
You mentioned your daughter there, Charlotte. You mentioned your daughter there, Charlotte, sad, because Charlotte died of ovarian cancer, as did your first wife, Cassandra, and as did your business partner, Bo.
Yeah.
I don't know if you know, but today is Daffodil Day in Ireland, and that's the day where the Irish Cancer Society raise funds. It's their big fundraiser. And we've mentioned already that one of your big paintings is called Cancer. And to turn a thing of beauty out of something so ugly, I suppose, is true art, is it?
In a word, yes, it is, because you express the emotions that are within you, whatever the agitation of the heart or the thump of anxiety that lives within your day or your time. Art is a great leveler to express yourself, no matter how crudely on the page with a pen and pencil, or to grab a piece of clay, or to grab a hammer and chisel. And for me, it's oxygen. For me, it's a deep necessity, because sometimes, you know, as I say, my work as a painter came out of grief and came out of. One of the first paintings that was in my show there last year, the retrospective, is called One Dark Night. And it was when Cassie was in the second year of dealing with her cancer. And I had bought all these canvases and brushes and paints. And I just went to the canvas and started painting with my fingers. And... two of those pieces are still part of my work. They're seminal pieces. So you reflect on that. I mean, they're not all dark. I paint when I'm joyful. I paint when I'm trying to work on a part. You know, my job as an actor, I have to travel. I'm off to Leeds here in a few weeks, and I've never been to Leeds, but the work will be demanding, and so
you
know,
bring the art with you. Yeah. Pierce,
you bring the art with you. You set up a studio.
Yeah. As I said to you, we said to our listeners you were going to come on, so we invited them to send in questions or comments. Margaret has been on. She says, I know two of Pierce's aunts, Brosnans. They were very talented actors in their local drama groups. That's Margaret. And somebody else says, I had a glass of beer with Pierce in Wicklow many years ago while he filmed Remington Steel. I have the photo as proof. He says, hello, I bumped into Pierce in New York City years ago. Here's a question for you. Does he think Aaron Taylor-Johnson will be a good Bond?
I think the man has the chops and the talent and the charisma to play Bond, very much so. Ironically, he was in one of the movies that I made. You mentioned Beau-Marie St. Clair. She was my late producing partner. We formed a company called Irish Dreamtime and made movies like The Thomas Crown Affair, Evelyn. One of the first movies we made, one of our earliest movies, was The Greatest, and he was in it. He was the greatest in it. It's a lovely movie with Aaron and Kerry Mulligan, Susan Sarandon, and myself. So, yes, I read the news about his possibilities of being a Bond, so I would definitely tip my hat to the fellow.
What advice would you give him?
Be bold. Go out there. Have a great time.
Right.
Just love it. Just go for it.
Yeah.
He can do it.
I spoke to Pearson Dingle years ago, says Siobhan. Ray, would you ask Pierce the most valuable advice he received from any of the director or co-stars he has worked with over his career? Michael wants to know that.
Bruce Beresford. I made a movie with Bruce Beresford a long time ago. A very beautiful film as well, I might say, called Mr. Johnson. And we all want to act. We want to act. We want to perform as actors. We want to fill the space. And Bruce's direction was simple. Keep it simple. Just keep it simple.
There you go. Don't overthink it. Eileen is on from Castle Island in County Kerry. Pierce, she says, can you ask Pierce if he has any recollection of a connection to Castle Island, County Kerry? I remember great excitement many years ago when I was in school and a rumour that Pierce Brosnan was in town. I didn't ever see him about the town then or since, but I do think that at the time there was some mention of a connection with the area. I'd love to know if this really happened or did I dream it? That's Eileen.
Cool, yeah. Well, you know, Kerry Brosnan, my father, Tom Brosnan, was a Kerry man. When I finished GoldenEye, my first James Bond movie, Keely and I had been together for about a good 2 years at that point. And as soon as the clapperboard went down on the last scene of GoldenEye and I punched the lights out of the great Sean Bean, I took off for Ireland with the destination of Kerry to go back there and see where my father, Tom Brosnan, came from.
And you
that
go
was
to
the first and last time I was there.
Do you get back to Navan at all?
I haven't been back to Navan. No, I read that they tore the house down there a while ago. It was a bungalow on the banks of the River Boyne that my grandfather built. And the last time I saw it, it was a wreck of a place. It was. I went there with my mother, and you know, it was a lovely wee bungalow back in the day. And very pastoral. It was the other side of the town on the banks. But the day on that particular day I saw it, it was just it was filled with beer cans, and it was an awful mess. So there you go. Everything changes. Everything falls apart. And I thank everybody who wanted to keep it. But some things you just can't keep. So it's a fun memory.
Fair enough. Now, two more questions and then we let you go. Thanks so much for your time. Pierce has driven some flash cars in the Bond movies. Could you please ask him what he drives in real life? David in Dublin wants to know.
I drive a Range Rover. That's Keely's car, actually. And then I have a BMW 750i. And, yes, when I got it a few years back, to tell you the truth, I like cars, but, you know, a car's a car. I don't crave them or possess them. I'd much rather have some fine art hanging on my wall. But that's what I drive anyway.
Final question from Bernie for you, Pierce Brosnan. Will you ask Pierce about the happiest day of his life? That's a tough one, isn't it?
Oh, I try to have happy days every day. I get up and I give thanks for this day and all the days of my life. And you just go out there and try and do good things every day. Happy days, the days...
That's a good message. That's a good message, yeah. Listen, Pierce, I'm just going to recommend once again The Last Rifleman. It's a great watch. It's up there on Sky Cinema. And I think it'll be shown eventually on RTE, who partnered on it sometime next year. Pierce Brosnan, thanks so much for your time. Thank you.
Thank you, Ray. Thank you. All the best to you. All the best now. Be well.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.